Welcome to the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell. The Wellness Enclave will explore emotional health and its impact on everyday life. In the Enclave, we will address how emotional health is connected to other parts of your life, such as physical health, relationships, spirituality, and even decision making. Our goal in the Wellness Enclave is to help you become a healthier, happier you through motivation, education, and innovation. And now, the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Donna Sewell, where emotional health and wellness is our top priority. Today in the Enclave, we have a special guest, Dr. Ralph Harris. He is a psychologist and a licensed clinical alcohol and drug counselor. Today, he'll be talking to us about substance use, abuse, and addiction. I think this will be a very helpful show for those of you who may be struggling with addiction and or you have loved ones who are struggling with addiction and you may want to understand the disease a little bit more. So, we look forward to informing you. We'll be right back after these messages and after this very, very good song that our engineer has rigged up for us. So I really hope it gets your morning going. Welcome back, everyone, to the Wellness Enclave. And again, we have a special guest in the studio, Dr. Ralph Harris, with us. We are going to be talking about addiction, more specifically, substance abuse, drug and alcohol addiction. Good morning, Dr. Harris. How are you?
Good morning. Good.
So, one of the things I kind of want to jump into, of course, we know that we've had problems within the community or within the United States with drugs, especially within the last 30 or 40 years. It's always existed, but it's becoming more and more of an epidemic or a pandemic. Periodically, we have different trends, meaning we have certain types of drugs that may be more prevalent during certain decades, okay? So, can you tell us what the trends have been for the last few years in terms of drug use? And I know opioids, I know that's a big one. At this point, that's an epidemic. But can you tell us what the trends have been like for the last maybe 5 years in terms of drug use and drug abuse?
Basically, for the last 5 years, marijuana has escalated, crystal meth, ice, opioids, like you mentioned earlier. Okay. And basically, these are contributive pain medications. You look at the plight of our health system and the lack of physicians and the lack of treatment facilities in our communities. So when people seek help, it's always to pamper folk is to give them a pain medication.
Okay. So What I want to do today is talk about some specifics. I feel like a lot of times we may have individuals who are either struggling with addiction, and or we have family members and friends who are dealing with someone who may be addicted. So the first thing I want to talk about is how do we determine whether or not a person is addicted? Like, what's some of the symptomatology that we're looking for?
First, it can look at genetics. A lot of us are predisposed to the gene for alcoholism and drugs. Looking at your family history. If you look at someone like myself, being a child of the 70s and the Vietnam War, looking at the morphine epidemic, which was kind of like squashed under the table, and then when it came back to expose our community to heroin, then to a cheaper version to crack cocaine and cocaine itself.
Okay. So if I'm looking for the symptoms, and one of the things you mentioned before we talk about the symptomatology is that you're at increased risk if you have that genetic predisposition.
Yes.
One of the things that I want to clarify is this, and you and I have spoken about this before, is that just because a family member, whether it's mom, dad, grandparent, whomever, just because that family member is an alcoholic or an addict, or was an alcoholic or an addict, it does not mean that it is inevitable that me as the child will become an alcoholic or become a drug addict. It simply means that we are at an increased risk for developing that if we practice unhealthy habits, drinking habits and things of that nature, if we practice unhealthy habits when it comes to drinking alcohol. So it seems that it means that we're at increased risk. Is that correct?
Yes. And also just like breast cancer, if you had a genetic for breast cancer for African-American females, you'll look at that predisposition and you'll begin to take other precautions not to, you know, have that symptomology. So it helps us as we know as that predisposed that we have ourselves as a heightened awareness of substance use. Impulsivity, looking at our behaviors and looking at how do we deal with stressors, utilizing a substance versus then using conventional therapy or other medical professional advice.
Okay. And when we look at a standard drink, let's start with a foundation. So, and the reason I'm going to start with a standard drink, and again, then we'll go back to symptoms. I feel like we need to have a baseline or a premise so people know where we're working from. So according to the National Institute of Health, there is something called a standard drink. So the standard drink is a 5-ounce glass of wine if you drink wine. A standard drink is not when you have that goblet and you pour a glass of wine and it takes up half of the bottle. That means that surpassed the standard drink right there. So technically, to remain, and let me say the standard drink is set up for a person to remain healthy. So I'm going to give you some really quick guidelines on that, and then we'll go to again, some symptomatology. So we're looking at a beer is 12 ounces, a glass of wine is 5 ounces, and when you're looking at a shot of liquor, that's 1.5 ounces. Now, again, when we're looking at, when the NIH talks about a standard drink, they're talking about a drink that is considered in portion to be relatively healthy, provided it's done in moderation. So let me tell you how the NIH breaks down moderation. So we're looking at if I drink daily as a female, I can have a standard drink daily, but it cannot exceed one standard drink per day, okay? But I can have a standard drink, I can have a standard drink daily. Now, if I decide not to drink daily, so I still cannot have over, this is the way the NIH has it set up, a female cannot have over 7 standard drinks per week. Bottom line, that's what they're considering as healthy, and it minimizes increased risk for addiction as well as any type of impairment like falling down, you know, those types of things like that, becoming ill, impacting your health. So no more than 7 standard drinks per week, and I can't, if I drink daily, it can't exceed 1 per day. If I drink, say if I drink sporadically throughout the week, then I cannot have more than 2 standard drinks in one sitting. So that means, say if I drink on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I should not have over 2 standard drinks on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm still within the 6 per week, but I haven't gone up to 3 drinks because if I go up to three drinks, that increases my risk for things like, again, falling, getting a DUI, which with Uber out, it should not be a problem. With Uber and Lyft, you shouldn't be drinking and driving anyway. Now, for a male, the way the standards are set up is that a male cannot have over 14 standard drinks per week. However, if you drink daily, it should not be more than two standard drinks per day, because 2 times 7 is 14. 7 days in a week, two standard drinks. If I'm a male, or let's use Dr. Harris for an example. If he drinks if he drinks sporadically throughout the week, he should not have more than three standard drinks per day. So let's say he drinks Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. If he has three standard drinks on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, that's still within the guidelines, because we're still looking at nine drinks per week, did not exceed three drinks. It did not exceed three drinks in one sitting, and he did not exceed 14 drinks in a week. And I know that's kind of confusing, so if you need those guidelines, again, I did not make them up. That is the, National Institute of Health. So I just wanted to make sure we had a baseline. Now, let's look at some symptoms for addiction and questions that you should ask yourself. So how, if you are a family member, say you're my son, and I have some concerns about how much you're drinking, because the second portion we're going to move into drug use, but I have some concerns about how much you're drinking, what is it that I should be looking for? Because I don't know anything about those guidelines. Most people don't know anything about those guidelines. So what are some of the behaviors I should be looking for? Or what are some of the questions that I might ask my son just in passing, so it won't make it seem like I'm just drilling him in terms of, okay, I think you're drinking too much?
Well, basically, when we look at that standard of drinking, the reality is that most people binge drink. Mm-hmm. And that daily, so again, that daily count of that normal drink is not taken into consideration. I would look at the pattern of behavior as far as memory loss,
okay.
Sleep, bad mood, poor mood disposition.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, their behavior as far as isolating, because mm-hmm. a lot of times with the alcohol is the depression, isolation, the withdrawal. And nowadays with thermoses, and mm-hmm. That would be for an adolescent, I would observe their thermos.
Okay.
Because they know how to mask drinking.
Would that be lean? Like lean with the Jolly Rancher?
Yes, and the Locos, mm-hmm. which, you know, again, the caffeine content.
Okay.
And if you can imagine that mixed with 3 ounces of alcohol, what type of reaction or the behavior reaction that would have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and also it's good that eye contact, that dilation of the pupils. When you're dialoguing with that individual and they can't maintain eye contact, their impulsivity is so sporadic that they're twitching and moving.
Okay.
And they begin to be forgetful.
Okay.
And things don't seem to be important. They seem to be kind of mellow if something comes up that it's important of a task,
mm-hmm.
and they minimize that task. That's a standard traditional family thing that needs to be done on a daily basis, and they minimize it. I'll get to it when I want to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing comes to homework and everything else, or assignments.
Okay. And some of those things, too, are germane to adults. They apply to adults,
yes.
as well. Really, most of what you said, and let's look at homework assignments, maybe not a homework assignment, but just a work task,
mm-hmm.
as well. My experience has been when I did, and I don't have as much experience as you do, of course, but in working with people who had abused substances, and particularly alcohol, because we're talking about alcohol, a lot of what they did, they started calling in off work on a regular basis.
Yes.
They would come into work late because they had drank quite a bit the night before. They also started spending their money elsewhere and borrowing a lot of money as well. A lot of people think it's simply drugs that people are addicted. When people are addicted to drugs, those are the individuals who are stealing or trying to get money. People who are addicted to alcohol do the same thing.
Yes, it is a drug.
Okay. All right.
And in essence, what you're saying is that mm-hmm. when that individual takes that first drink, you got to realize that they are essentially chasing that first high forever.
Okay.
Because you're trying to get that same euphoric feeling the first time. And that's why most people drink in higher doses, to get that same feeling of euphoria.
Okay. And one of the other things before we go to before we go to a break, one of the other things that I wanted to talk about was, or mention, was something called social dependence. And that comes along with adults as well as with adolescents. So social dependence is basically when you guys are drinking about the same amount. Say you, I, and our engineer, Greg, all of us hang out. All of us may have the same drinking habits if all of us drink. So it's nothing for us to, so if we have the same drinking habits, then more than likely we're going to have some of the same results. See, social dependence normalizes your behavior. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're addicted, but it does have a lot to do with when you're in that social phase,
yes,
of drinking a lot. So then I end up, let's say none of us are taking the shared riding, no Lyft, no Uber. If I end up with a DUI, then if you have the same drinking habits I do and the same behaviors, you may end up with a DUI as well. To us, this is how it normalizes behavior. It doesn't seem like it's anything wrong with our drinking because I say, hey, Harris got one. So, and you say, hey, Sewell got one. That's just what comes along with the territory. He'll think the same thing, you know? And the analogy is that I always use, if you don't understand that with social dependence, think about how we were raised and how we hear people that have high blood pressure. Okay, family members have high blood pressure. My grandmother may have acquired high blood pressure when she was like, say, 50. My mom did the same thing. So then when I get ready to go to the doctor and he says, hey, you know what? You need to, what are you doing? You need to exercise more. You know, you need to eat a little better, so on and so forth. And I say, hey, you know what? Not really, because my grandmother had high blood pressure. My mom had high blood pressure at 50, and I'm probably going to get it at 50. But in reality, what has happened is my grandmother taught my mother how to cook. My mother watched my grandmother not exercise that much. I grew up in a household with my mother. She taught me the same things, how to cook. So I'm not cooking healthy. I'm not exercising because I haven't seen her exercise. But I'm not tying in is their behaviors that have massively attributed to the high, sure, blood pressure. What I'm saying is same as social dependence. Mm-hmm. That's what I know. That's the group that I'm in, and that's what I understand, and that's what I understand to be true.
Yes.
My truth, even though it's not necessarily true. Exactly.
And that's good. It's what we call transference issues.
Okay.
We can all hang out together, and we don't look at our body index.
Right.
Our BMI.
Yeah.
So I don't want to describe your height and weight, but again, right, it's right, different from mine. So what you can fill back or drink, I could do more. Right. And that social acceptance is that I got to keep up.
Okay.
And keeping up, we're peer pressured.
Okay.
And so we're trying to say, well, wow, I'm transferring. If Dr. Sewell can do it, I'm sure I can do it.
Right.
And I don't know your level of tolerance. And so that's where we as individuals, even at my age today, it is peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
In the social setting, I don't drink. But I'll get a cranberry and orange juice and take the big straw out and walk around because I need my swag too.
Right.
I want to fit into that conversation.
Right.
I don't want to be some goober with a big gulp.
Right.
Walking around the club, can't, you know. So again, we all want that acceptance and want to be a part of our society, our community.
Right. Okay. Okay. Wow. Okay. So I actually like having you on the show. I didn't know I was gonna like you like that, Doctor.
Okay.
No. He and I work together all of the time. Very intelligent. So I appreciate the conversation. You've been listening to Dr. Donna Sewell and Dr. Ralph Harris on the Wellness Enclave. We're gonna go to a commercial break, and we will be right back.
Forget to renew your driver's license, or did you get a ticket that you forgot about? Download the new DDS2Go mobile app to manage your driver's license from your cell phone. The Georgia Department of Driver Services will send alerts directly to you, so no more forgotten renewals or surprise citations. Renew, replace, or change your driver's license address from your phone. DDS2Go on the mobile app store. It's like having a licensing center in your pocket.
Hi there, healthy people. Do you have a healthy product or service? If you are a certified medical professional, fitness trainer, author, or chef, Old Fashioned Health would love to promote your services or product on the Old Fashioned Health Radio Show. Please reach out to us. Call 404-793-3960 or email us at oldfashionedhealth@gmail.com. You can also contact us at oldfashionedhealth.com. Old Fashioned Health, good health, inside and out.
Welcome back to The Enclave with Dr. Donna Sewell and Dr. Ralph Harris. We are talking about addiction. The first half of the show, we talked about alcohol addiction. Right now, we are going to delve into drug addiction. I want you to keep in mind that the symptomatology of addiction, regardless of what the substance is and or the issue, they're pretty much the same, even if you have a food addiction, any of those things. So I want you, gambling addiction, the behaviors are pretty much the same, so I want you to keep that in mind. So, Dr. Ralph Harris, Dr. Harris, our in-studio guest, is very knowledgeable, and we don't have but a few more minutes. So I wanted to ask you, what are some of the myths that are out there about various types of drugs?
Okay. We tend to look at today because the opiates is on the rise because of the OxyContin, and you look at it as almost being like a middle-class drug. And the reason why it's so prevalent and it's getting so much attention is that it correlates back to crack cocaine. In our community, they made the crack cocaine epidemic the butt of all jokes, crack addict. Mm-hmm. You don't see no making jokes about opioid addiction when you decimate communities in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. West Virginia. So when you look at that impact, we have to be proactive in our community too.
So let me, before you even finish that, I want you to clarify, when you say our community, who's our community?
People of color.
Okay.
urban communities
okay.
that don't have resources to health care,
okay.
treatment providers, don't have insurance.
Okay.
So again, those individuals who are hooked on OxyContin had insurance.
Mm-hmm.
That's a process we didn't have. And so when you look at that and you look at how it impacted our community, they made it a joke
mm-hmm.
because it wasn't such an impact because they were not coming into our community buying the drugs. They found their own pusher, which was the Professional Hospital and Medical Association mm-hmm. by going to doctors, and they pushing pills just like a pusher on the street would push mm-hmm. crack cocaine.
Okay.
They just had offices and buildings and stuff like that.
Following that analogy, would you also say it's economic as well? Let me tell you why I ask that. When methamphetamine was a big issue, it did not necessarily hit. When we saw where it hit, mostly it hit low income, Caucasian
yes.
individuals. So they did a little something. They tried to do a drug court or whatever, but it wasn't that much. Basically it was in rural, low-income communities.
Sure.
So it did not seem as though it was a lot done about it. It seems as though, again, when we go back to looking at the opioid epidemic, it's a little different because it sure. may be hitting people of a different class as well. Would you agree with that, or tell me what your thoughts are on that?
You're right, and the reason why you look at it is it's a national emergency.
Okay.
Once the president identifies opioid epidemic as a national emergency, basically FEMA takes over management of national crisis in the United States of America. So at that point, anybody with that type of addiction or problem, all treatments are free.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Marijuana, that's a big one. When I used to teach DUI classes, and for those of you who don't know, within the state of Georgia, sometimes if you are caught with marijuana, they have you go to DUI classes as well, the risk reduction classes. The biggest argument and the biggest argument amongst the classmates, not with me as the facilitator, was, is marijuana a drug?
It's a class one drug, federal. And what happens with marijuana is that we talk about marijuana but not understanding the THC. The reason why the opiate epidemic is growing so strong with marijuana, because most people who smoke marijuana, it is laced. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we call it the loud, the good marijuana that people talk about, that has the loud smell, the popping. That happens because it's laced with black tar heroin coming from Mexico. And also it's laced with brown sugar heroin coming from Mexico. And most people don't realize that until they come into treatment, like into my office and say, Dr. Harris, how did I get opioids in my system when I just smoke weed? Mm-hmm. Well, weed or marijuana does not come like a bottle of Heinz ketchup with the ingredients on the
right.
bottle,
right.
whether you get the squirt, the pack, or whatever, it's the same mm-hmm. it's the same ketchup.
Okay.
So when you buy marijuana from one district person to from another person, it's going to vary because people are going to lace it with different things to get a different potency, to get a different product, to keep the clientele. And so they're experimenting with the marijuana, and that's why the epidemic of marijuana is so intense today versus 10 years ago.
Okay.
It's heavily addictive because of the lacing of the heroin and the black tar heroin and brown sugar heroin.
Wow. Okay. Okay, that is really good information. So thank you, Dr. Harris, for being my in-studio guest. If someone wanted to get in contact with you and wanted to find out what kind of services you provide, how would they get in contact with you?
They can reach me at Anise Incorporated.
They can reach you at Anise Incorporated, which is located
at 236 Forsyth Street.
Okay. And what kind of services do they provide at Anise Incorporated?
Integrated health services, behavioral health, substance abuse, HIV prevention, risk reduction, support networking, and peer support networks.
Okay. And it's a community-based organization. It's been in existence for a while. The CEO is Ms. Zena Agent. It's a really good organization. Again, I would like to thank you for being my in-studio guest today. You've been listening to Dr. Donna Sewell on the Wellness Enclave, or in the Wellness Enclave. Again, I hope this information was helpful to someone, and I wish that you guys have a happy and healthy week, and have a fantastic day. Thank you, and I will talk to you next week.
This has been the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell. Join us each Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. on WWWE The Real 1100 AM. We look forward to growing with you.
Thank you for listening to another Old Fashioned Health Network show on The Real 1100.